Hello and welcome to the Oxygenetic Triathlon Podcast, brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com, electrolytes in different strengths that match how you sweat, and Precision Fuel 30 gels and drink mixes to give you enough carbohydrate to perform at your best. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENETIC15. Right, everybody, it is the new year, and I wanted to bring you a super inspirational show to really get you ready and fired up for the new year. And I looked back over the archives, I looked back over the last year for different interviews that I've done. And I've got age group interviews, we've got pro interviews, we've got winning interviews, we've got people who haven't had the race they want interviews. The one interview that stood out for me out of all of those, just because of its the sheer scale of the ridiculousness of the adventure, was the story of age grouper Gareth Whittle. If you've not heard his story before, Gareth went to celebrate a birthday with some friends of his. Went to Alaska on a skidoo expedition. Ended up getting trapped by an unexpected storm with heavy snow and temperatures down to minus 40 degrees. And what should have just been fun ended up with him and his friends literally fighting for their lives, ending up with frostbite. Coming back from this trip, Gaz came back unable to walk with his feet so badly burned, we thought he was going to have them amputated. And there's a happy end to the story. That obviously didn't happen. Gaz goes on to regain full health and full fitness and get back into great shape. I'll talk a little bit at the end of the interview about what the future has held for Gaz from there. But for anybody out there going through a hard time, I know there's a lot of people at the moment going through difficult times with family, with stress, with money, with illness, with health, with coronavirus, with lockdown, with mental health. It's been such a challenging year. I wanted an interview that would sum all of that up and leave people feeling inspired and thinking, oh my God, there is a story of incredible adversity that somebody's got through by applying themselves to it. What can I do? How do I move myself forward? That's the key. That's the old line from Rocky, isn't it? It's not about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forwards. And I'm not above a little bit of Hollywood cheese when there's a streak of truth beating through the heart of it there. So I'm unashamedly saying that. I think it's awesome. So sit back, enjoy. It's New Year. You're probably out on your bike somewhere, out for a run somewhere. I hope you're having a great time and enjoying a little bit of peace and quiet in the crazy family times. If you're going through a hard time, use this story as a bit of inspiration, hopefully to help you through. And if you're going through a hard time, keep on going. That's all I'll say to you. Thank you very much for listening to this interview. It was one that meant a lot to me. I think the story is amazing. And without further ado, I'm going to hand you over now to our interview of the week with age grouper Gareth Whittle.
All right, Gaz, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on. We've hit record. We're officially rolling. How are you doing today?
Good to be on. Yeah, really good. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. So we've got to tell your story to the listener. So a bit of background for people who are listening. We're probably closer mates than anybody that I've interviewed for the show before. So there's going to be we know each other pretty well on a sort of social and having had crazy adventures together kind of level. Yeah. So I guess the thing to do is to get across your story so everyone kind of hears it from the beginning, because the person you were before I met you is very different to the person that you are to now. And in some ways it's also very similar. So let's go right back to the start of your triathlon journey or multi-sport journey. When did you first start getting into doing?
Yeah, I think I can trace multi-sport back to about 2010. Right. So very quick history pre that. Never been a particularly sporty person as such. And any sports that I did tended to be sort of solo things. I wasn't a team sports kind of guy at school or anything like that, right? But I've always been I've always had a bike of some description. Yeah, be it BMX or when I got a bit older, it was mountain biking for a while. It still is on occasion. I do love that and what we've been out, haven't we? So, you know, that's fun. So I've always rode a bike to some level or other. And then I met my wife, Babs, through my work, right? And we employed her as a sales manager and probably didn't, I don't know how this sounds, but I ended up marrying someone who I employed. But anyway, over the years, we were getting to know each other. I kept hearing
as,
his name.
As the phrase goes, somewhere in the distance, yeah. A lawyer's phone rings.
Yeah, I know, I'm just checking that. It all worked out fine, you know. But so as we're getting to know each other, you meet the social groups, don't you? And I've come across this guy called Heapsy, Andy Heaps, and kept hearing these ridiculous stories about, oh, he's done this weekend, and he's going doing that, and, you know, he did this ridiculous food challenge and tried to eat as many cream eggs as he could in a minute. You know, I'm like, who is this guy? He's like, he's an absolute idiot. Anyway, I then meet him and find out that he's into triathlon, right, which is, you know, something new to me, something I knew about or had never done. Couldn't swim, just about ride a bike, horrific runner, right? It's just not so totally unrelatable to anything that I ever did. My background's martial arts, which I got into from probably when I was about 10.
Okay.
Until late 20s. So I did an excessive amount of martial arts.
Do you know, I did not know that about you.
Did you not? Oh, no. Mate. Yeah.
What martial arts did you do?
Oh, many. Started out in karate. And then once I got my instructor belt, my black belt in that, I then branched out into Thai boxing, Filipino martial arts.
Then I love this. Casually throws in the black belt. I like it. Okay, so if there's ever any trouble.
I did it for, 20 years or something. So I got really into it, I'm an all or nothing person, as you know, right? So I ended up doing it 5-6 times a week and just ridiculous. So that's my background. Anyway, so I meet Heapsy and he's telling me about he's going off doing this 24-hour mountain bike event. He's doing whatever. We should go mountain biking one day. I'm like, yeah, cool, that'd be great. I mean, that was an eye-opener for a start, right, as you well know. Then he talked about this duathlon in Langdegla. Now, I've been to Langdegla at the mountain bike centre, and I was like, that sounds cool. What is it? He's like, well, it's just basically run, bike, run. I'm like, oh, cool, I can do that. I'm a black belt. I'm invincible. I can do what I want, right? And at this point, I'm a good 15 kilos heavier than I am now at this point, right? Horrifically undertrained and overconfident. So I turn up at Langdegla with Heaps and a few others who I saw that I also knew from doing what we do. Like, there's a few bartenders there because I used to sell beer for a living, right? And I'm like, this seems more daunting than I was expecting. And we set off on the run. And it's not even a big event. I don't even know what it is. Is it like 4K and 6K runs or something with a bike, a 20K bike, something like that in between? Horrific day, raining, cold. Did the first run. Like, I'm almost dropping down dead. And I'm like, oh my God, I've still got the bike to do. Came in virtually last on the first segment, then did the bike and overtook a good few people. That was a confidence boost. And I thought, well, it's not so bad. Then I set off for the last run segment and people are literally packing up and getting in the cars and, wishing me luck. And I was like, well, this isn't great. I set off, do one loop round the run and off I go back, thanking my lucky stars, it's over. And one of the marshals went, you all right, mate? Have you been twice round? I'm like, you what? He's like, have you been twice? And I laughed at him thinking he was joking. And he was like, no, I'm serious. You've got to go twice around. So I genuinely almost burst into tears. I jumped off at 100 kilos for my second lap round this run course. And I got back and honestly, like, Babs was a look of concern on her face. I'll never forget. And Heapsy, just comical, just collapsed in laughter at the sight of me. I was like, this is awful. So I'll try to make some notes this morning so I get my timing right. But I honestly think that was the last endurance event I did for about 5 years. It was just awful.
Yeah.
Horrific. I mean, it was such a wake up that one, you can't just turn up to events and think you're going to, do well. And two, you're not a runner. And I'm not too sure whether you will be ever. It was just a lesson in, you got to prepare for these things, you can't just rock up and expect to do well.
It's interesting that you can be very, very good at something. You can be a black belt in karate. And obviously that, I mean, I don't know, I couldn't fight my way out of a wet paper bag, but I'd imagine it gives you a ton of confidence in any kind of,
absolutely.
In any kind of like confrontational or any kind of situation.
Just any situation. Yes, that's the beauty of martial arts. I came from I wouldn't say I was bullied, but I was definitely more on the sort of more vulnerable side at school.
Okay.
I'm 6'2" and like a big lad, but I don't know, that's just the way my life panned out. I was a very shy kid.
Kids are cruel, aren't they? Yeah.
Oh, it's cruel. School can be cruel, can't it?
Yeah.
So I got into martial arts and it transformed my character. And you just carry this confidence with you, which transcends into everything. So it's fantastic for that. But it does also breed a bit of overconfidence in your your sporting ability, I think. So yeah, that was
Well, look back a little bit then. I suppose to to fill the readers in, you were 100 kilos then, you're a lot closer to 80 now.
Yes.
Yeah. How's life different for someone who, because very few people go through that transformation of being 100 kilos or being very bloody fit and being closer to 80. How is life as a carrying an extra 15, 20 kilos on your frame? How are things different? Well,
aside from the obvious things like clothes and shopping, I'm quite tall, so I wasn't one of those people that get pointed at and like, my God, look at the size of him, because I'm tall enough to carry it off.
Yeah. But
it's when you get thrown into doing like a little run or a bike ride, and you go out with others who aren't your weight, and they perhaps do a bit more training, they're a bit physically fitter, and you get really shown up very quickly. And for someone of my temperamental ego, let's say, that's not great, And then you get, it's the odd, it's comical, but like, I remember a few years, well, around that sort of time, I went to New Zealand with work with Kieran and Chris and my business partners, and we did the bungee jumps, the three bungee jumps that you can do there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing experience, but not one to be repeated. Anyway, I step up, and the guys organizer go, here he is, a big fella, bring out the big rack. And excuse me. I'm like, they had to bring out like a different band for me, from the others. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not that big. Like, look at the size of you. I'm like, oh. So there are things like that that happen, silly things, but it does prey on your mind, I think, if you're being honest with yourself, going, perhaps this isn't
okay.
Where I need to be. And then I don't actually know what the wake-up call was, other than probably that duathlon was the starting point of you could do some work here, right. Or you need to do some. And then as you get older, as we were talking about before, with age comes ailments, and that isn't helped if you're carrying around 15 kilos of timber.
Yeah.
And then just wanting to be all you can be. So, you get into biking, and biking with all that extra weight is not easy, is it? So
biking and running, both of them. It's a very simple equation, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. Yeah.
I think that's
the difference, really.
Yeah.
You have more energy, don't you? More energy and just more zest for life, I think.
Right. So from 2010 onwards then, you've had the duathlon experience. What was the point when you got the tipping point of deciding, right, I'm gonna kind of start taking the endurance sports triathlon type stuff a bit more seriously? When did that come around?
I don't know exactly, but it's an ongoing association with Andy, and him doing things, and then obviously, getting involved with yourself and building that business. So I've got a connection to that side of life that I didn't previously. I'd always ridden bikes, and like most, or seemingly nowadays anyway, most lads who reach 30 plus decide to get either a shiny carbon bike or a set of golf clubs, right? And seemingly increasingly people are going for the biking. So I'd got a road bike, and I started doing less and less martial arts because I was just having too many injuries, and I was driving around all over the country all the time to get to different events, and it was just too much. Work had really kicked up a gear, and so the businesses I'm involved with had grown quite quickly. So biking became like a go-to Sunday morning thing that I could do to clear my head. I'm one of those people, like probably most of us, that has to exercise. And if I don't exercise, I'm not a very nice person to be around. It's how I process day-to-day stress, I think.
Yeah.
I'm one of those weird people that really looked forward to and enjoys beasting myself on a Zwift session or something,
So
it works for me. So I got into biking, and then through association with Heapsy and his involvement with you, we got chatting, I think, and he might correct me on this, but I'm sure we're around at my house talking about triathlons, and he convinced me over a few beers, as he tends to do, to get involved and sign up to Slate Man, right? So as first triathlons go, I mean, that's unpleasant, isn't it, as a introduction.
Baptism of ice rather
absolutely.
Than...
Absolutely. I mean, nothing's as bad as the duathlon at Langdegler, clearly, right? That's the pinnacle of any suffering, as far as I'm concerned. And that's now the barometer that me and Heaps use. Yeah, but was it as bad as Langdegler? Well, obviously not. No, can't be. but the Slate Man was everything it promised to be. Freezing cold, wet, and grueling, and as I've alluded to, I'm no runner. So running up a Slate Man isn't easy after biking around Windermere in the rain. So And I couldn't swim at that point. So most of the swim was breaststroke. I even went on my back at one point, did a bit of backstroke. So, you know, it was interesting, but, you know, I finished it. And after I got over the shock of it, I did reflect and go, you know what, that's enjoyable. I enjoyed the mental challenge of it, which I think is a major part of what attracts me to a triathlon. You know, it's the mental challenge of it that I like.
That's like the reoccurring theme, isn't it? It's the going towards the things that scare you seems to be. Yeah.
That's definitely.
What sort of year was this then, Slate Man?
Good question. I'm going to say it was 2017.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a good few years after Langdegler. But as I say, I'd managed to lose a bit of weight by then and get more involved in endurance-y type stuff. I don't remember. I think I might have even done a couple of half marathons, you know, like Manchester Half and stuff. So
okay.
I'd obviously dipped my toe into endurance stuff. And then it just took a few beers and heaps of to persuade me to sign up, you know. I mean, it's a daunting experience, isn't it? Your first triathlon. Like,
yeah.
Standing, waiting to jump into the water, particularly, you know, it's 13 degrees or whatever it was. You know, that's, you've got a wetsuit on for the first time, all that. I mean, it's full on. It's a major thing.
That, funnily enough, that was my first triathlon was in the same lake. It was, they had the original Half Ironman UK was held there.
Right.
And so I've got a very similar reminiscence of standing ankle deep in the water, just going, I cannot believe how cold this is.
Yeah.
You surely cannot be expecting us to swim all the way to where those yellow boys are.
Exactly. You're like, really? Can that be right? And that shot when you dive in, you know, you lose your breath and then you panic and then you swallow water. All those amateur things that we all do, you know, it's all part of it, isn't it? But what a day that was, yeah. And then later that'd be impressive, wouldn't it? The same year, I did Castle Howard.
Right.
You know, the Castle series. And that was like a spa day in comparison. It was a lot warmer, a lot more genteel, just an overall more pleasant experience, partly because I knew what was coming and partly because it was just less harsh conditions, you know. So, and from, I think from then, that then sealed it. It was like, right, this is what you do now. You're a triathlete, you know. And I sort of like that. I like having an identity that you can sort of sign up to and go, right, that's what I'm part of now. And say I'm all or nothing. And
I think there's a lot of that in our sport, actually. It's interesting you say that because I've not heard anyone articulate it as well as that before, but I think we like an identity and triathlon is something we can take on and be like, well, this is what I am. I'm a person who does triathlons and trains them for what the weather is. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really important to me that I don't know why, but it is. I need to know that I do something and I'm standing for something. It's part of my identity. So when people ask, what do you do? Oh, well, I'm an entrepreneur and I do this. Oh, and also I'm a triathlete, you know. And despite what I might have done in my business career, all the talk with everyone, you know, when you meet new people, it's always about triathlons in terms of people want asking me, you know, I try not to be one of the typical Ironmen that, you know, how do you find out who's done an Ironman and who's not? Don't worry, they'll tell you type of thing. Well, so I try not to do that, but anyone new you meet and you tell them what you're into, they never really focus on the businesses or whatever I might have done investments wise. It's always about a triathlon.
Yeah.
And I quite like that, you know, because it's good to have a story to tell, isn't it?
Yeah.
Honest with ourselves.
Well, the obvious next question then is, you know, you're all in after you do Slate Man. Now your identity is a triathlete. So the obvious next step is, when do you enter your first Ironman?
Well, the minute that you give Andy heaps of beer and talk about and talk about it. So in 2015, I sold a UK part of my business. So I distribute a cider from Sweden called Record League. And in 2015, we sold the UK cider, which was a huge, well, huge for us, sorry, business part of what we did. And so when that went, I think looking back, I felt like I had a bit of a gap, a bit of a hole to fill, you know. And the Ironman, the UK route, the Ironman went past my house, like literally past my drive on Great Lane in Croston. And I've seen it over the years and I'm always inspired by, you know, big events and particularly Ironman, because it's cool, isn't it? You watch these people fly past you in the drop bars and you think, wow, that's awesome. You know, I could do that. And being an all or nothing, I'm like, well, you know, if I can do an Olympic, I can definitely do an Ironman. So I'm just immediately going to sign up. So I got talked to heaps here and he was like, yes, well, now we're talking. And he just convinced me to sign up. and I don't know when this was, it could have been over Christmas 2017 to do it in 2018. So I'm in, right? I'm signed up with you guys and I'm like, right, well, okay. I'm doing an Ironman then in whatever, 8 months, 9 months time. So that was that then. And then that became, you know, an extension of my identity that, well, I'm an Ironman in training now. So I'm then obsessing about doing that, and that became it. And then my world changed because then I had to move to Australia for, what, 7-8 months for work. So I then had to defer.
Right. Okay.
So I had to do it in 2018, which is, and that was, I think, that was the year that the fires, wasn't it? And they had to amend the bike route.
Yeah.
So I missed right. that. Yeah. So I ended up not doing a lot of events in 2018, but I still carried on the training out in Australia. So I've got a mate over there who'd done, well, two mates actually. One of them used to work with us as a got a personal training business, and he did Cairns. So we sort
right,
of,
okay.
I piggybacked on his training and just made sure I kept my eye in, you know?
Yeah.
If I could. But yeah, that was a bit of a weird year in terms of progression. You've done Slate, man. You've done Castle Howard. You're identified as a triathlete, and then you don't do any events because you right. moved to the other side of the world. So that yeah. was an interesting year. But I managed to defer, and then it was sort of ready and waiting for when I came back ready for 2019.
So do you have a pretty clear memory then of, because when you say that the route of Ironman UK goes past the end of your driveway, it literally does, like the road at the end of your driveway is closed one day a year as
was
2,000 people zoom by, right? So did you used to wander down the path and watch more go by?
Oh yeah, we'd get the deck chairs out, we'd have the cowbells, I'd be handing out malt low, you know, saurine, and yeah. And then over the years I've known, you know, two or three people who were doing it. So we'd wait and stand and cheer. In fact, maybe 17, a personal trainer I had at the time, he entered it.
Okay.
So he entered it for the second time. So I was looking out for Dan coming past, and then he saw me on the second loop round, and he had this look of just horror on his face. You know, he's a fit guy. And I thought, well, doing it for the second time, he's out to, you know, break some records here for himself. And I thought, he didn't look right. I cheered him on, and then we walked back up the lane back to our house. And he was waiting for me outside the gates.
No.
I thought, oh no, mate, what's happened? He's like, oh, on the second lap, he was in tears. He was mortified, bless him. But he was on a feed station, and the person in front of him stopped rather than slowed down. So he went into the back of this person, came off, smashed himself up, broke his gear, all that.
Oh no.
So he persevered, tried to, like, you know, battle through, but he just couldn't do it. So, yeah, so I ended up driving him home that day, which is a real shame. But it just strengthened my, like, I need to do this, you know.
Yeah.
Like, this is me all over, you know. I can see myself being an Ironman, and how cool will that be? So, yeah, I came back thinking, well, it's going to be brilliant because I'm going to have loads of spectators. I'm going to go past my house, and it's going to be great. I can wave to my wife and my two kids, and then they changed the route. And it went nowhere near my house. They made it hillier and nowhere near. So I was like, oh, great. So... yeah, so that kind of changed things. But, you know, anyway, it wasn't the end of the world. It was still great. Well, you know, you would be out enough times. The crowd's always amazing there, and, you know, I got the support anyway.
But, I was going to say, you got to be careful what you wish for, because maybe having the bike route go by your own front drive when you're really hurting at 90 miles or whatever might not be such a great thing.
So when I was training on the long runs, there's a route that I can do. If I go out my house, do this route and come back, it's exactly 13.1 miles, right? So on the long run, you know, whatever, you build it to 3 hours, don't you? Now, I'm not the fastest runner in the world, so 3 hours for me is like one and a half, whatever it would be, you know.
Yeah, 20 miles.
20 miles, let's call it, yeah. So you go there and back, and I'm stood outside my gates thinking, I've got to turn around and go back again, yeah? Like, and that psychological, like, toughness you need to not just call in and go, well, it's enough, 2 hours is enough, it's good for me, it was good training. So it works all right for me, stuff like that. I'm one of those, I like a route that's laps. I like counting down, you know. Some people don't do it, they don't like it, do they? Whereas I prefer them, because in my head I tick them down and go, right, that's one to go, two, you know, whatever.
I'm the same, actually. I'm much happier doing
yeah
I almost get a kind of perverse pleasure from telling myself I'm going to quit at the end of this lap. And then as the end of the lap comes up, I've gone, well, actually, you've probably got to, come on, just turn around and... It's good mental training to just head off again in another direction, isn't it?
Exactly the same, yeah. So, yeah, so as I say, it didn't go past my house, but I did the training on that route, on the old route. So I did tick the box of being able to go past my own house on the drop bars, you know, and pretend I'm a cool lion man. there was just no one to watch, that's all. But,
before we talk about the race itself, let's talk about, I think one of the interesting things is how people balance the training that they want to do with the work that they have to do. Yeah. And there's everything in the sort of the guy who goes to work at 9 every day and comes back at 5 every day. And then there's people who work crazy shifts and how they fit it in. Talk us through sort of what your week looks like, if what routine there is to it, and then how you fit your training in around that.
Yeah. So in one sense, I'm very lucky in that I'm self-employed, right? How best to describe what I do? I'm a co-owner of a few different businesses. One's the Record League cider that I told you about, where we import cider to various parts of the world. Well, now it's less than it was because we sold off a few places, including the UK, Australia. But, you know, so lots of different time zones and lots of different challenges depending on the country. Mm. Another one is we've just launched another alcohol brand in Australia called Saintly. I'll get that little plug in there. And that's new and it's only in Australia. But again, you know, you're dealing with sort of time zone things really as much as anything. And then another business I have, a sort of help run, which is more the day job now, is Farmers On, which is an online butcher's, which sells heritage breed grass-fed meat. And then the other stuff I do is sort of seed investment. So I've got a number of investments that I and my business partners make in startup businesses in various different industries, right? I mean, it can be from finance, technology, through to personal training, through to water bottles that are a water bottle and a foam roller in one, stuff like, you know, like a whole range of things, but you're investing in the idea and the people.
You're a dragon. That's what you are. Essentially.
I'm a dragon without a fame or a TV contract. Yeah. So very varied, very sort of, I don't know. It can be stressful, but it's also really enjoyable at times. But it's a lot of plates to spin for different reasons. Yeah. So
that was going to be my reflection there. To you started off by saying I'm very lucky. I'm self-employed, and then you named four jobs.
Oh, and, there's more than that. I mean,
and at least two of those jobs, the work days are diametrically opposite to our work days. It's their night and our day.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, but you know, this is no sob story. It's been a challenging. Well, I started our first business when we were in 2004, right? So I've been doing this, getting on for 20 years, and it's been a roller coaster, right, of success and the highs of success and the very, very deep, dark lows of it's not success, let's call it, right, and everything in between. So, but it overall, I enjoy it and I thrive on it, and I do enjoy the pressure and the stress and the challenge of all these different plates. But yes, you wake up to emails from Australia, and you go to bed from emails from Australia. You know, you can't, there's no escaping it really.
Yeah.
But training can be done around it because I manage my own time and I don't really have anyone to answer to other than obviously myself and business partners really. So it's not as challenging as it might seem at times when, you know, it has its moments obviously. And then travel, which is obviously not an issue this year, but normally I travel quite a bit.
Mm.
Predominantly Australia or America really. But and then that can, you know, like anyone, you've got a training peaks plan to follow and then all of a sudden you've got to go away for a week, 2 weeks. It's not easy, is it? Because you haven't got all your kit with you and you've not got the gym or whatever. But it's overall doable.
So let's talk about how you manage it then. How do you do it? Because it sounds complex, and I know how you do it, but like for people who are listening, how do you go about managing to fit your training into a standard week when you haven't got a standard week and things change overnight and you wake up in the morning and things are very different to how they looked the day before?
Well, I like to think that I'm having a healthier approach and mindset to it than I started out with, which was can't do it today, move it to tomorrow. Can't do that tomorrow, move it all onto Sunday and just do a whole week in one day. Right? And you slowly but surely breaking through. Breaking that down on me, which is great, but you've just got to, if it's there to do and you want to do it and you're doing it for the right reasons, you just got to do it, haven't you? There's no, I'm a very black and white person, Rob, as you know. It's like, well, if it's on your training plan to do and you want to do it, it's your choice. No one's forcing you to do this training. You've signed up. Go and do it and stop moaning about it. Like, I struggle with, I'm my own worst critic, let's say. I'm very, very hard on myself. Like, nothing's ever good enough, right? And that's another thing you're working on with me, as you know. So if I miss a session when I know that I could have done the session, but I just couldn't be bothered, I'm very tough on myself for that. And I'm not very good at giving myself, or allowing myself a reason. I was about to say excuse, and then I know that you'd shake your head. So it's not an excuse. It's a genuine thing. But if there's physically time in the day, why just do it? So how I manage it, I don't know. Probably just stubbornness would be the answer. I don't know if that's what you were thinking the answer was, but that's how I see it. Just, you signed up to do it, so just do it then.
Good man. Right, so I'm at UK then. Talk us through race day. That's what everyone wants to hear, the cherry on the cake. So you start at 100 kilos in 2010 and then
So
race day morning for Ironman UK.
Well, race day morning was me and Heapsy eating our overnight oats in my kitchen at 4 o'clock in the morning, because I managed, so ordinarily he's convincing me and bullying me into signing up to these things. Well, Ironman, I managed to convince him to do it as well, which was awesome. So we did the, we did a lot of our training together, which was a mixed blessing, because he's a freak on a bike, let's say. So trying to follow him on a bike when you train is not ideal. But yeah, so it was overnight oats, force those down at 4 o'clock in the morning, get to, set up, and then wait around. And then, you bump into various people who you know or you've seen, or, try and keep the nerves at bay as best as possible. And genuinely, for me anyway, it was a bit of blind naivety of not really knowing what was coming outside of, well, I've done an Olympic and that's fine. And I know the crowds at Ironmans are great, but really, I don't know what it's like to keep going for 12 hours or 13 or 14 or however long it's going to take. And then before you know it, you're listening to AC/DC, aren't you? You're like, right, this is it then. Off I go. And it's just incredible, isn't it? As an experience, it's got to be up there with one of the most intense, amazing things that I've ever done. Did it go to plan? No, not at all. But I don't think it ever does it, for anyone? Swim was a little bit slower and choppy and more violent than I would have liked. Transitions, as I'm known in the team, are comically slow. I think my combined transitions at Ironman was just shy of 20 minutes, I think. So there's a bit to work on there, maybe. The bike was, it's a tough course, isn't it? It's a tough old route.
It's got to be one of the toughest and most, especially the new one, the most underrated in terms of, it doesn't look like much on paper, but in reality, it's difficult.
It's unrelenting. Yeah. It's just absolute leg sapping, because there's no, there never feels like a good section where you can just tuck in and just enjoy the, enjoy the momentum that you've built on the speed. So you're always digging away at it. So, and then you come to the run and, so I remember coming into T2, a bit shell shocked, did a decent bike split. It was a little slower than I was expecting, but that's fine. And then I came out of the tent, having spent 10 minutes, showering and in my hair and came out, and my dad was stood just outside of the transition, and he looked at me and was like, right, ready to go. And I was like, I could barely walk. I was like, Dad, I honestly don't know what I'm going to do. There's no way I could run a marathon. There's just no way. He's like, right, just, and I could see in his face, he was thinking, well, I don't know what to say to you here. So he's like, why don't you just try walking to the first aid station? It's only up that hill. I was like, yeah, I'm going to have to do that. So I sort of walked and hobbled, and I'm dealing with all sorts of cramp and mind games, really. My mind's telling me that it's not doable. And I got some water and whatever. I think I had some crisps or something. And I thought, I'll just put one foot in front of the other and just try jogging. And then, to your point where, you just mentally, you just go, I'll just break it down. I'm probably not going to do it. I'm probably going to stop, but I'll just see. So I just did that. And then off I was then. And then after 20 minutes or so, I was in my groove and shuffling along all right, And then a guy on the team, on our team, Ollie, who I'd seen on the bike, I went past him on the bike, and Not backstory, but pre-swim, he was like, don't look so nervous, mate. This is the best day of the year. Ollie was like forever smiling, if you remember. He's just always smiling, always upbeat, always happy. And I must have had a look of fear on my face. I was like, mate, you're going to love it. Honestly, it's brilliant. So I didn't see him again on the swim. He's faster than me. And then he was out on the bike. And then I eventually caught him on the bike. And he was still smiling. And I was in the depth of hell, like putting out ridiculous watts too high. And he was like, mate, just calm down. It's fine. It's fine. And anyway, off I went with him shouting, I'll see you on the run. It's like, yeah, probably you will. And lo and behold, there he was. And then for the entire marathon, we just kept sort of catching up to each other. And then he was in, he had some pain in his leg. He was really struggling. So then we ended up just pulling each other around the run and then pretty much crossing over the line together. It was amazing, really. It was awesome. It was really good. So as a felt more like a team event,
yeah,
because of it, you know, and it was really good. It's really special. I enjoyed it.
Camaraderie is great, isn't it? When you really brilliant. Suffer through something with somebody.
Yeah, really, really good. And that's been, you know, I was going to say towards the end, but that's been a real revelation of being part of this team. Never been a team sports person, as I said, but this makes you feel like you're part of something and it makes the whole thing so much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
It really does. It's incredible. It's special. So, yeah, so that was Ironman, really. Got over the line, caught up with Heapsy, who just, I'm sure what my mum's saying, he'd just come out of the medical tent. So, you know, it was my turn to laugh and point instead of him. And then immediately just wanted to do another one and sign up again. You know, I was it. I was in. I got my medal. I was an Ironman, and it wasn't enough. I wanted to do more, which has got to be a good sign, I suppose.
Yeah. You know? And so it's off to Copenhagen for a slightly different experience on a...
Well, I mean, you know, spoke with yourself, obviously, signed up with you, and yeah, it was very much right. What do you enjoy about the three bits of it? Where's your strengths? And I think my strengths lie in the bike. Well,
oh, yeah.
I know they do. And I think the strength of my bike... Thanks. I'm all right. But I think something like Copenhagen probably plays to my strengths more than on the hills, perhaps. So we'll see. I'm excited by it. But, you know, obviously it wasn't to be this year. So I've just got another year of training under my belt, ready for next year, haven't I, really? And this year has been... mixed for all sorts of reasons, hasn't it? So.
Well, I think, yeah, this will be an interesting segue, I think, for the listeners, because at this point we've done the kind of the triathlete gets back in shape, completes Ironman part of the story, which would be a great story arc for most podcasts. But at this point, we're going to kind of go into podcast story part two.
Yeah.
So bit of drama and excitement. I'm going to let you tell the story, but you and your boys decide you're going to go and have an expedition to Alaska.
Yeah. So forgive me if I start getting all weepy on this, right? So it'll be challenging this, but...
Well, it is. It's a serious thing, isn't it? Because,
it is. But
Should we preface it by it ends well? Let's preface it ends well, with that.
So worry not, listener. You know, all's good. But yeah, it's a full on, it was a full on experience to me anyway.
Yeah.
So as I said, I've got businesses in various parts of the world, and as our collective businesses have grown and changed, a group of six or seven of us, we're all really good friends, have all scattered around the various parts of the world. So we've always sort of said, when we share various investments together and things, so there's always a reason to meet up when we can, right? So what we've tried to do, as much as anything, to justify it to our better halves at home. Oh, well, we're meeting up in, you know, wherever it might be, Canada, Whistler, Vegas, as a work meeting, right? But we'll always try and tack on something fun at the end of it, if we can. And over the years, we've done some amazing things. You know, we've been to Vegas for the boxing, we've been skiing, we've done all sorts, right? We're really lucky and it's been brilliant. And a couple of years ago, 2018, we decided to book this 4-day motorbike riding and camping under the stars at night through Yosemite. And it was unbelievable. It was amazing, right? I mean, it's an adventure, but it's a safe adventure for office workers, basically, yeah. So you've got support vehicles following you. You've got a chef and campsite, you know. I mean, it's like ridiculous, but amazing. Really good experience. Really enjoyed it. It was just the right amount of edgy fun, right, without it being a risk and a danger, you know. So you've got, you know, riding motorbikes, yes, it's dangerous, but it's safe as can be. And then you get to camp, put your tent up, and then some chefs making you amazing food. You know, it's like, it was brilliant. Really good fun.
And of course, Berg did adventure trips, right?
It's exactly that. And I think that statement was even used, right? So we had that under our belt, and we're like, right, a couple of years later, let's book something again. And we're like, we don't want to, you know, sometimes people chase after the same thing. So you book it again thinking it's going to be special, and it's not, and you end up ruining the first experience because you've tried to replicate it, right? So look, let's stick with the same company, but just switch it up a bit. And they did a similar type of experience, but on skidoos in Alaska. Right? And I thought, wow, what an experience that'll be. Marketed and sold as basically the same thing. Obviously not camping under the stars, but you're in a lodge, and there's catering, and there's a show, you know, it's all that you want it to be, right? And you've got a professional guide that's worked in Alaska for 20 years doing this and all that. And you're like, well, you know what? This sounds amazing. It's going to be fun. You're in the Alaskan wilderness. You've got the night sky. You've got the nature, all that. It sounds perfect. It looks brilliant. Website was amazing. So we booked it for late February of this year. So, yes. So we're in Whistler, and we get a flight up to Anchorage to meet our guide, yeah, and then from there it's a four hour drive into nowhere basically. So it's exciting, and we're like, wow, So a couple of years ago in Yosemite, we meet the guides, and they're like amazingly cool guys, all live in LA, and they're just brilliant, awesome people to be around. Our Alaska guide picks us up, and it's like he's the grumpiest, most massive human I've ever seen, zero humor. Non-appreciative of our banter, and like, just it's quite a scary individual, right? And we're like, oh, this feels different. And we just couldn't get anything out of him. And we're like, well, yeah, we're just, you know, bunch of beginners up for a bit of fun and experience, and looking forward to the challenge. He was like, beginners, this is not a beginner experience. It's like almost offended, you know, this is an extreme adventure in the middle of Alaska. We're like, well, that's not what we booked, mate. He went, that's what it is, but don't you worry, I'll get you through it. I've not failed yet. I'm like, we should have known then. I mean, we should have been pulling the plug immediately, but you don't, do you? You're a bunch of 6-7 lads who are camaraderie. No one wants to say, I don't want to do this, I'm too scared. So we sort of like, we did talk. I remember talking about it, going, this doesn't feel right. You know, like, where's the fun? This seems more like a endurance effort, but we're in. We made the effort to get to Anchorage, for God's sake. Like, let's crack on. So I wake up the following morning in this dodgy lodge. I have the worst breakfast known to man. Scrabble around trying to find kit that will fit us, you know. And even the guy, even this Derek guy, is saying, "Look, the equipment's a bit crappy, right? But you've got to make sure it fits, because if it doesn't, you're going to be in serious trouble." We're experiencing the coldest weather and the deepest snowdrifts we've seen in decades. We're like, wait, hang on a minute, this isn't right. So anyway, after the briefest of safety briefings, off we go, and immediately people are falling off left, right, and center, right? And we're falling in, we're driving into the snow drifts, we're coming off. It was just carnage, right? And about an hour in, we sort of tried, we're getting the hang of it, but it's not easy. And because of the conditions, it's very difficult to keep these things on the path.
I was gonna say, is it hard to drive a skidoo?
Really hard, because
I don't think anyone in the UK will have driven one, will they? I've seen them in movies.
Yeah, but I mean, it's awesome. But they're really, you know, obviously if you turn right, unlike a bike, you don't immediately turn right, do you? It takes time for the skis to kick in.
Oh, right? I see. Yeah.
You know, so there's a skill to it, and it's all about body weight. And then if you've got massive snow drifts basically encroaching on the path that's been pre-rode in, if you like, makes it very difficult. And the second you catch some loose snow, you're off. And
right.
These things weigh a ton.
It's like trying to ski through powder when you've
exactly.
just learned to ski on,
well,
on a piste.
Yeah,
right,
it's like,
yeah,
someone
okay.
going, taking a heli skiing when you've just like learned the snow plow. You know, like it's very difficult. So Derek's like losing his patience with us and basically shouting at us. And it turns out the other guy that they brought along with him only occasionally rides a skidoo and barely done any in the last 5 years. And there's us seven in the middle going, well, what the hell are we doing? You know, so we're ambling along at not a very progressive speed, and it's getting later in the day. Derek stops as he's like sick of shouting at us, gives us our lunch, which genuinely was two slices of dry bread with a piece of processed cheese and ham in it, right? And I'm no nutritionist, but even I know that's not gonna fuel you for a 12 hours skidoo trip in minus 40 odd degrees temperature, is it? You know, oh, well, this isn't great. Oh, and the other sound advice he gave us was, don't overfill your water bottle because it'll freeze. So we all went out with half water bottles, assuming that your lead guide is, you know, well catered and well prepared. No, he hadn't brought any provisions whatsoever and hadn't even brought a snow shovel. So we had, and every time we came off, we had to use our hands to, like, you know, dig a hole to then right the machine to get back on it. So the whole thing was just a disaster, right? And we got to this, he stopped us and said, right, we're running. I've never had a slower group. I'm like, well, thanks a lot. You know, it's getting dark. It's getting colder. And we're at a turning point where either turn back and go back to the lodge where we were, or we push on to the lodge where we're meant to be going. And we're not turning back because that's not what I do, right? And we're like, are you sure about this? And you've got, at the end of the day, you're completely out of your comfort zone. You're tired, you're wet, you're cold, you're annoyed, both at yourself but also at the situation. You have to trust the people you've paid to take you out, don't you? So
yeah. We
just went, okay, Derek, if that's what you think's best. So off we go. And then the weather just turned almost on a dime. It was scary. It went pitch black very quickly. Dropped down to, I think it was minus 46 maybe at its coldest, which is
minus 46.
Yeah. And blizzards and wind, it was all going off, right? And we'd been going another 2 hours, falling off even more because, you know, the conditions were just so horrific. Our goggles were freezing over, so we couldn't see. So we had to take the goggles off and you know, sort of ride whilst shielding your eyes because your eyelids were freezing, so you couldn't see that. It was just a disaster.
Hang on, mate. We've lost your sound again. I think there's something. There must be a loose connection or something.
Are you perfectly? No.
And there we go. Yeah, you're back again.
All right.
Don't move.
I won't move. So we're trying to make our way slowly through to this lodge. Weather's getting worse. We're getting more and more tired. And eventually Derek stops and said, right, coming up, there's it's what's called an overflow. Now, I still don't know how this works, but it's minus 40 odds, yet it's free flowing water. I don't know. It's a mystery to me. He said, whatever you do, you cannot come off as you're going over this overflow. You cannot come off. So obviously, what do you think happened? Off we go. And it's like wacky races. We're all flying off left, right, and center, right? And I had to stop because the guy in front of me came off. So, and it's a narrow path. So you have to stop and help. So as I get off my machine to go and help, my both boots filled up with water.
Oh.
So immediately I'm thinking, well, that's it. Like, obviously that's the end of could be the end of a lot of things, but I know having water in that temperature that far away from civilization is not a good thing. Same happened to Ben with his fingers, with one of his gloves. Same happened to Ant, who 2017, I ran the New York Marathon with him, and he's done 20 odd marathons. Right? He's a really passionate runner. He got water in his boots, and we were just looking at each other, thinking, well, you know, we're in a serious world of trouble here. Eventually got over this this water area, and then Derek decides that he's going to have to go off and find a route to this emergency lodge because we're not going to make it. Right? The path's totally covered. It stopped snowing, but, you know, it's so cold you can barely open your eyes, and, you know, it's not looking good. And Derek's changed from being this really aggressive bloke to almost overly kind and supportive. It's purely panic. He's panicking for us, thinking, well, we're not going to make this. So he decides to go off, right, and find a path to a lodge where we don't know where it is. We don't know where we are. We don't see him. We're like, well, what do we do? So we amble along for a bit, then get lost, can't see his tracks anymore. And we're literally, I've never known isolation like it. You know, outside of
I can believe.
Our group, you're looking around, incredible night sky, right? Very beautiful, but very scary.
Yeah.
You know, it must have been sort of 9, 10 at night. I'm like, right, lads, what do we do here? By this point, my boots have frozen solid. I can't feel my feet. I can't wiggle my toes. So my feet are just in ice, box of ice, basically. Same thing's happening with lots of other people. We've all got like wind chafe on our cheeks from the wind and, you know, can't see properly. We're having to prise our eyes open. We've run out of water. We've no food. we're having to snap the genuinely snap the icicles off our beards or wherever we've to eat it for water. So it's a desperate situation, right? So we tried calling emergency, you know, evac in, who told us that because of the temperature, the only helicopter that could come and get was is a Chinook, which they don't have. So we're on our own. But they will try their best to get in touch with any local lodges. They know roughly where we are because they know the guide and his routes, but we couldn't pinpoint where we were because nothing was working. So we're like, right, what do you suggest we do? We said, well, there's only really three things you can do, which, you know, is obvious. You either sit there and wait it out and hope and pray that your vehicles don't stall, because if they stall, they might not restart. But if you wait, you're obviously going to run out of fuel eventually. Yeah. So, or secondly, you can dig snow holes and wait it out till morning, and you'll be slightly warmer than you are now, but you'll definitely be looking at limb loss.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Or third, you can sort of head off in the general direction of where you think your guide's gone, in the hopes that at some point you'll bump into him or track or something. And even they were, you know, like, I know that's not a great choice, but that's all you can do. So we were like, right, well, I mean, you know, it's very cliched, but it's so true. You literally see your life flash before your eyes. All you can think about is your kids back at home and your wife and your friends and why am I so stupid? Why am I doing these things? Why have I done this? But then you're having to constantly check yourself, say, well, I didn't sign up to this. This is not my fault, you know. So anyway, we almost voted on it, right? We took a vote of what do you want to do? And there was only one choice, really. You got to carry on, haven't you? You got to move forward. So collectively we said, right, let's just head this way. Oh, that's it. I forgot about this bit. So we each tried to call home before we set off in the, let's say, 50-50 chance, we thought, of survival. So we thought, well, at least let's try and say bye to our family.
Oh, God, Gaz, yeah. I didn't know it was.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
But phones weren't working because it's too cold. So the batteries are gone. So we're like, that insult on injury. Like, I can't even say bye-bye. So anyway, so off we go. And we just carried on for an hour or so, stopping periodically to let everyone catch up and group huddles and, you know, group support type of thing. And then that's where everyone's personalities really came through. You know, like it was a real team effort, because everyone's different and deal with things differently, don't they? You know, obviously you've got the stronger types who go, come on, I'm going this way, we can do this, lads, to the people that need the support and like, we're not going to make it, and what about X and what about Y and what about my family, you know. And we had it all from all of us at various points, utterly convinced at one point that we were basically going to freeze out there and die, you know. It's very surreal and obviously upsetting. Anyway, an hour, it must have been an hour, it must have been, and then we see these lights in the distance, and it almost like a film. You go, it can't be real, it can't be real, you know. And it was bloody Derek and these two guides that he'd found at this lodge coming back. It's a genuine miracle that we were on a roughly similar path to where Derek had gone, because we could have literally like pointed in any one direction and gone, well, let's go that way, you know. So back he came, and then we had another hour or so of just basically doing everything we can just to stay upright and get to this emergency lodge, which we eventually got to. And then just that feeling of collapsing in this warm, well-lit, you know, comfortable lodge was just unbelievable. But that was then just the start of the hell to follow, you know, in terms of the thaw out and trying to get the boots and gloves and everything else off, you know. But we got there and no one died, and what followed was just miserable.
So the first thing that I know of this as coach is I get a text from you. You're off on your happy jolly adventures as far as I know, and I get text of what I initially assumed was some kind of laddish japes as like your face is contorted as the boys are trying to pull your boots off, and it very quickly becomes apparent that we've got like a serious situation going on. And so how did you guys get out of there? Were you evac'd that evening?
Oh God, no, they couldn't get to us.
Still in the lodge. You feel completely frozen solid.
Yeah, it took an hour to get the boots off. They were using hair dryers and all sorts to, you know, defrost mine and Ant's boots and Ben's glove. And honestly, mate, the adventure got these. I was telling them to stop pulling because I was utterly convinced that they were going to snap my feet off.
So your feet were literally frozen. Well,
they cut them off, and my feet were the texture and feel of knocking on wood.
Oh my god!
And the color of snow, right? And I was like, well, that's them gone. I couldn't move them. If I knocked them on the floor, they made it like a, you know, knocking noise type of thing.
I couldn't feel them at all.
No, not at all. They literally felt frozen solid through. I thought, well, that's that then. And then, you know, the looks of concern from everyone, including the lodge staff, you know, who've seen a lot of shit over the years, let's say. And I thought, oh, no. And they were like, no, I think you'll be all right. I think we've caught it in time, I think. And it was all think and I reckon, you know. And it was like, well, so I was freaking out, as was we all were for obvious reasons. But, yeah, I probably didn't handle it very well. And then that thought,
I think you probably did. I think you should. Well, you should give yourself a little bit of a gap here and a pat on the back. Because
I told you, I'm my own worst critic, mate. So, so then you suffer from cold hands and feet, don't you? You know when you warm up and there's that pins and needly feeling as your fingers warm back up.
It's called the hot aches in windsurfing when it goes from numb. Right.
Yes.
All of a sudden, feeling as though there's a blowtorch going across your skin.
It's excruciating, isn't it? Right. Yeah.
It's so hard to describe how painful that is, isn't it?
Exactly that. So I had that for 12 hours.
Oh my God.
12 hours. I mean, me and Ant were literally
just
rolling
screaming.
Around
on
our back, you know, almost like you've got permanent cramp, you know, when you're like just grabbing it and you just can't believe the pain. It was just unbelievable. And same with Ben, bless him. And well, we all had very, you know, everyone's cheeks were windburnt and noses were scabbing over, and it was just miserable, mate. Anyway, the next morning we start making calls to see what our options are, you know, and then the insult to injury was our guide and that company refused to pay for an evac. We had to pay for our own rescue, which we've still not got our money back for, right? But I mean, just ridiculous. But anyway, long story cut short. They went and made a runway out on the snow at this lodge, and then two planes came in and flew us back to Anchorage.
Wow.
Straight to the hospital, who took an assessment and basically said, well, it's too early to tell what the longer term damage is going to be, but you've all got a frostbite. Your feet are knackered. And Ben, your hands really knackered, and you need to prepare yourself for amputation. So, So then we spent the rest of the day and the night in Anchorage. If there was ever a story of human spirit, this is a beautiful story, right? So we go to this bar and we're all wrapped in bandages and feeling sorry for ourselves and just shell-shocked, sat around this table, right? And just reliving it, but trying to be positive because, you know, we're still trying to process what the hell has just happened. Yeah. We're nearly dead 24 hours ago, you know? And obviously our phone's now working and our wives are getting in touch and, you know, all that. And this couple came over, the two girls came over from New York, and went, do you mind if we just perch on the end of this table? Because we're on a big table. Well, you can do, but we apologize for what you might hear and what we might, you know, sporadic, random bursts into tears and stuff, you know, reliving it. Anyway, we get to go and pay, and these two amazing girls had obviously been listening to our story, right? And they'd just gone and paid our bill and just said nothing and gone. And like, bless them. How amazing is that?
It really is.
Wow.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Just a little thing like that tipped us all over the edge. We were like sobbing as we were getting our coats at this bar. It's ridiculous. Anyway, day after, we then arranged flights home. And I was going to come home until Andy's wife, Jess, who's an anaesthetist, obviously, in medical, said, what the hell are you doing? You need to go straight to hospital. So I landed and went straight to Withenshaw Burns Unit, and they admitted me for 3 days, like, straight away, you know. And I was like a little celebrity in there because it's rare you see frostbite, I guess, in Manchester, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
So I had everyone calling in to have a good gawk at what was going on, and that's when all the blisters came out and all the horrible stuff that you've seen on WhatsApp started happening.
And on behalf of everyone listening, I'd like to thank you for forwarding those photos on.
You're welcome. Yes, you're welcome. I did a race report, didn't I? And I was like, from, you know, from the depth of despair through to race success, and the pictures I did, I should have thought about it really before I posted them, but it's not pleasant. Let's put it that way.
Well, it's hard to describe, isn't it? How your feet looked when we complete the story arc and we say that was February, obviously you've landed about what, 3 weeks before COVID properly kicks off this year and all the hospitals basically go into lockdown.
That's right,
To go through your recovery and end up being able to complete Outlaw X from feet that were looking like, I mean, from feet that were solid white blocks of wood in Anchorage.
Well,
looked in within shores, unbelievable.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate in terms of recovery. We did catch it in time. I did the right things. Thank God Jess told me to go to hospital. You know, the debriding process was just next level horrific, where they, you know, clean your feet and all that and dead skin. So. But it was all worth it because we got on top of it and the treatment was put in place. And then, yes, I had to leave the hospital because of COVID and I had to sort of change my own bandages and that sort of thing. Yeah, but I mean, how's this for a surreal story? Ben, who had similar problems but with his hand in Australia, they had to sort of he had to check out of hospital as well and go home. And they basically said to him, "Look, mate, it's not looking good. At some point, whilst you're sat at home, your fingers are going to fall off. When they do, give us a call and we'll tell you what to do next." I mean, that's next level, isn't it? So it didn't quite happen. He managed to go into hospital and have it done properly, but that was the reality of COVID and what the consequence might be by not being allowed to be in hospital.
Wow.
Yeah. So the recovery started, whatever, end of March, was it? Beginning of April. And then me and you got together and said, right, what are we going to do here? And then, you know, you, mate, if you don't mind me saying so, was a massive and major part of my recovery. So thank you for that. I mean, you helped me back as much as anything to say, look just be happy with the walk, mate, and don't worry about running, and you know, forget about swimming, just can you turn the pedals over, right, we'll do 10 minutes. And you, me being me, like, no, I need to do it, you know, 100% FTP for an hour. You're like, no, I think what you want to do, mate, is, you know, can you put your trainers on and start slow and build? And for someone like me with zero patience, that's not easy, you know. So I've needed the likes of yourself and the team and all manner of people to get me to where I've got back to.
Is it interesting reviewing back and talking the whole thing through, how obviously when you're living in the moment, it at every stage along your recovery, it becomes, oh, my feet are too sore to run, that's an annoyance.
Yeah.
But we're actually kind of going, it's actually bloody great that you can.
It's amazing.
Any,
yeah. I love feet pain. I love it. I don't love it because the outcome of this whole episode is, I've got both feet, I've got all my toes, I just can't feel various parts of it, and my feet have changed shape because of the swelling, but I can work around it, right? And it's not ideal, and my feet and hands get very cold very quickly, but I've still got my feet, and I can run, right? Whereas in the end of March, I was being told that I might not have feet, of March, sorry. So, I mean, I've got to be lucky, I've got to be feeling fortunate for that. So, yeah, when I get feet pain now, my initial reaction is, yes, I can feel something. She's, you know, odd. And then I get annoyed and go, I do genuinely like the fact that I can feel my feet. And if they're hurting, then so much the better, because it means my nerves are working.
Yeah, right.
Which is crazy, isn't it? But there you go. That's the, yeah.
And so the season, you know, we'll fast forward through the gradual recovery, I suppose. But
yeah,
to get you back to the point where you actually complete Outlaw X to finish the year off.
I dipped my toe at Max 6, which was the event you and Andy put on, which was awesome because it was my first real test of, can I do these things?
Yeah.
I won't say competitive because, you know, I'm a very trying triathlete and I'm not podium. I'm not going to podium, but I'll get through stuff. And I did it. And I could swim and my feet didn't give me too much pain in the cold water. I would bike fine. And then I ran and I managed to run for 2 hours straight. I didn't set any records, but I ran for 2 hours straight, you know, and that was amazing. So that was like a huge mental release, if you like. I was quite emotional after that run because I was like, I'm back, you know, I'm back to level anyway.
Yeah.
And then it's just got better from there. You know, did Outlaw, obviously, and various other things. We did Fred Witten, didn't we? So that was, I mean, that was off almost zero training, having not done anything since February in Alaska, and to almost, not quite, but almost a, do you fancy riding the Fred tomorrow? And you're like, yeah, go on then. You know, and that went all right. You know, so stuff like that that makes you go, well, I'm capable of doing perhaps more than they realise.
To be fair, you did have my sorry ass to drag around the thread, which tempered anybody's ambitions of going fast.
Well, maybe, but we also had Andy at the opposite end, so you know.
It is, you're right, though. It's great to kind of go, like, you can come back from the depths of, you know, no, I don't care how injured somebody is right now.
Yeah.
They're very probably not as injured as you were. To get back to the point where you go, right, let's go and ride the Fred tomorrow.
Yeah.
And to be able to do it shows you how much fitness your body hangs on to and how much almost like fitness memory your body hangs on to.
I made a note of this because I think it's really important. I genuinely believe with the program that we follow and the training that we do, I don't think people appreciate just how much fitness you carry just in general day-to-day life. And had I not had that, I dread to think what the outcome in Alaska might have been, because fitness and that mental strength, if you like, that triathlon training, your plans puts into you and forces you to do is significant, you know, and that you must keep going, you must persevere, and, you know, it's a huge part of it. And the 100 kilo Gaz Whittle from former years might not have had the same outcome that this version has, let's put it that way.
It's interesting, so, that, isn't it?
No, I really believe that. So yeah, things like the Fred are a welcome challenge for me now, and as are anything else going forward, because, you know, whilst the Langdegla triathlon was still the worst that ever could be conceived in terms of effort, Alaska wasn't far behind, I don't think. So yeah, for me, mate, it's, you know, Outlaw was done. I really enjoyed that. The guys did an amazing event, given everything that's gone on this year, and then it's on to Copenhagen next year.
Yeah,
so I'm sort of, I'll touch with what else to say, but I'm back. I think I'm back. You know, which is exciting.
And just share before we wrap this up the story of you and Ant doing your marathon.
So bless you. So we were meant to be doing the marathon this year as well, and that obviously got deferred.
Was it meant to be New York? You meant to
New
be
York, together? Yeah, New yeah. York. And this will be Ant's 21st marathon. And he always said, I'm going to do 21, then I'm out, right? And his birthday's on the 21st of October. So I said, you know what? Let's run it virtually together on the 21st. And because New York Marathon, they put on a virtual event, you get a medal for it and all that. So we set off. He set off at like 4 o'clock in the morning, his time locally, because he lives out in New York. And then I set off at whatever that is, 9 o'clock my time. And we just ran around with our headphones on, chatting to each other, and ran around our local villages until we'd done the distance. And you know, to be able to do that, given 6 months prior, we were both in hospital with bandages around our feet in wheelchairs. So it was quite a special moment.
It
was great. And even better, I was 10 seconds faster than when I did it in 2017. it was great. It was a really emotional moment, that, and a sort of definite, like, we can put a line under this thing now.
Yeah.
I think I said, it might have been to Nat or to you or someone, you know, in the team, I'm not allowed to talk about Alaska anymore. That's it now. I've dined out on it a bit. I've bored people with it. I've used it as a reason, an excuse maybe sometimes, to not do stuff. Well, that's it now. If I can run a marathon and I can do Fred Whitten and I can do an Outlaw, I think I'm over it.
Yeah.
For the right reasons, you know, in the right way. I'm not downplaying it. I'm not saying I'm not fortunate and or otherwise to get through it, but I've got to move forward now. And that's the plan.
And that comes across, mate. That comes across in what you're saying. And I think it's a great example of, like, healing fully. Your body's healed, but also you've gone through that process mentally and gone, right, there's all these things I've had to resolve and all these things I've got to let go of and all these emotions that, you know, that's the kind of thing could circle around you for the rest of your life if you let it. Or you can choose to deal with it fully and move on. And it sounds like you've really done it.
You know, like, I'm not waking up with the nightmares anymore and seeing the starry sky and shivering and stuff, which, you know, I went through, and I'm not carrying the guilt of not doing more to help. I mean, there's all sorts of things you go through, you know, or carrying the guilt of, my God, I nearly didn't see my kids again and stuff like that. I think we've collectively, all of us, moved forward positively from it. And definitely, again, cliched, but definitely stronger for it, you know. So I've just got to put that strength to use now, haven't I?
Yeah. Mm. Well, do you know what, mate? That's a pretty good place to take it to.
So, I think so.
Next summer, I'm in Copenhagen, October I want to say 22nd, is that right? Yeah, it is. August the 22nd.
August, don't scare me, mate.
No, August the 22nd.
August 22nd, yeah. So that I can't wait for that. You know, be a fun event, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's do it. Let's see what happens.
Brilliant. All right, man. Do you know what? That's great. Thank you so much for sharing your story, man. It's a mind-boggling story. And well done.
No, I enjoyed it. It's great to chat, and thank you. And thanks for everything you and the team. I just want to say thank you to everyone for all your support. It's been very much appreciated, and I'm going to get emotional now. So.
Oh, bless. All right, we'll wrap it up. Friday all right. Too.
Great to chat.
Cheers, right. Gaz.
See you, mate. Bye.
Pretty cool stuff, huh? Great ending to the story. So obviously there you've heard Gaz gets himself across the finish line of Outlaw X. I'm happy to announce, for those of you who don't know, Gaz crossed the finish line of full Outlaw this summer. And of a, you know, the very peak of a return to fitness, I think completing an iron distance race, full Outlaw, is the pinnacle of what all of us can hope for in fitness. And he got himself there from the depths of thinking that he was going to have his feet amputated to completing, you know, a full distance race. And it wasn't easy for him either. It's not one of those happy endings where he went and finished in 9:30 and had a happy all singing dancing day. He had the full on got his money's worth experience. He had agonizing neck pain on the bike, all manner of like upset stomachs on the run, like a lot of people seem to struggle with that day. Pretty miserable, challenging experience, and he got himself through it. So Gaz, really proud of you. Everybody else who has been through, is going through a hard time this year and has kept on going, good on you as well. I'm proud of you. It's, you know, it's been a hard year for a lot of us, and to get through it, to get to the end of this year and head into 2022, let's hope that it is it's a better year for all of us. And that's where I'm going to leave it for this year. Thanks very much for listening. It's been amazing. We've managed to rack up, last time I looked, 1.25 million downloads of the podcast, which is quite mind-blowing. So people out there are listening to the stories that we're telling. I'm hoping people are inspired by the stories we're telling, and I'm hoping people are making changes. So if that's you, if you're out there and you're inspired to go and do something amazing this year, remember, any of the people crossing the finish line of any triathlon, be it sprint, Olympic, half iron, Ironman distance, they doubted that they could do it at the start of their journey as well. So don't let that doubt stop you from getting started. Don't let it stop you trying. Give it a go. I remember being very intimidated when I was lining up for the, you know, even to sign up for my first Ironman 20 years ago, really thinking I had no place there. And to be fair, I probably didn't. But I had a blind faith I'd be able to put something together and do it. And it changed my life in ways I couldn't have imagined at the time. And I think it will yours as well. So there we go. We're going to wrap this up. Happy 2021, everybody. Here's to a happy new year for all of you. Happy, healthy. Hope you get to spend some time with your family and friends and loved ones over the new year. I think there's some tough times coming in January for all of us in the UK, but we'll get through it just like we've got through this whole year. So keep your chins up, keep your heads high. I will see you again next week for another interview, and I'll be bringing you an interview every week, God willing, all through 2022 as well. Take care of yourself. What do I need to do at the end of a show? We always got some stuff we talk about, don't we? Sponsors, we love them. Sponsors, Precision Hydration, love these guys. Use the code OXYGENADDICT15 for 15% off your first electrolyte order. And if you're interested in finding out more about triathlon coaching, have a look at teamoxygenaddict.com. I think we've got the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program for busy age groupers. There's a link in the show notes. You can book a call with me from the start of January. We'll have a chat with you, see if you're a good fit for starting coaching with us, if we can help you to achieve your Ironman 70.3 any distance triathlon run ultra dream in 2022. Take care of yourselves, everybody. There's links in the show notes for all the sponsors, so you don't have to remember them. Until next week, Have a great, safe training and racing new year. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya.